Welcome to the Ether. Today is Sunday, May 22nd, 2022. Today on the Ether, part two of a three-part space, why DAG will be top 10, Web3, NFTs, and ESGs. Let's take a listen.
Plus, it's a huge security gap because you're giving so much responsibility to those Solidity developers. If they want to mess with you, they can easily take out so much stuff. And then, like, we've seen it happen over and over and over.
Yeah. You're exactly right. Yeah. And most of these people are completely unaware of what's going on versus the other
aspect. Hashtag Infura, hashtag money, hashtag profitability, hashtag Andreessen Horowitz. That's exactly what Vitalik says when he hugs you and says, Martin, I don't like the monster Ethereum has become. He doesn't like it. There are many people in Ethereum who don't like what Ethereum has become. And at the same time, there's so many venture capital funds behind it that love it because it's such a money printing machine. Well, let's not play about Ethereum. Let's see what the merge brings in August if it's really happening. But as you rightfully say, what did I just look at? Who just spoke? Sorry, I lost your avatar.
Me.
Yeah, where, here you are. Yeah, it says BTC and ETH started Web3. Constellation is here to finish the job. I love that. That's a perfect phrase in your bio. So it's time to change trains, I think.
Token Cat, did you have a token catcher?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, hi, how are you, everyone? How's everyone?
Yeah, doing good.
Good, thank you. Just want to ask about your well-being. I've been hearing everyone talk, and I'm really bullish on DAG. And one thing I would like to get out of the way is a lot of people are claiming that Polkadot and Kusama are, like, demonstrate a layer zero protocol. But I don't think they do, because they're not, like... If they did, they would not have bridges. Because DAG is infinitely scalable. They can transact with every data. But I don't think Polkadot and Kusama can do that. And also, they can't connect public DLTs like DAG can. Like, Quant and DAG can interoperate with private DLTs. Am I getting this right?
Yes, you're 100% right. It's just... Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing. I think it's just a fancy catchphrase, right? And I think others started noticing it, right? It's a good advertising slogan, right? Layer zero. But if you really if you look down and you dig under the hood, right, you realize that these others that are claiming to be layer zeros aren't truly a layer zero.
Again, we have a terminology problem. Exactly like we have the word cryptocurrency.
Yes.
We are marketing DAG with terminology built for Ethereum, right? So layer zero, layer one, layer two. That's what I laid out in my article, DAG for Dummies, right? That there is no relationship. We shouldn't even be talking about DAG being a layer zero. There are no layers there. The layers were invented to solve the Ethereum problem. We don't need that.
Yeah, the problem is the masses are thinking the other way. Like, they don't know that what DAG can do, and they have replaced it with Polkadot and Kusama because it has been heavily advertised.
Yeah, there are some really, really spectacularly good things about Polkadot. I'm not going to get into that. This is not the space for it. So Polkadot is a very good, very academic, very geeky, very nice project. It has its very good use cases. So it's not a bad thing. Polkadot and the Kusama and the Canary change and the change and all that. It's a very good project. But it exists in a space that has no relevance to the space that DAGs exist in. So this is DAG is like a parallel universe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I mean, even though sometimes I will get into the comparison things, almost because you're sort of forced to, but
exactly.
Yeah, you're forced to, but it's not. It's not even in the same space, and you know we're not even going after the same use cases, right? And this whole crypto space is big enough for multiple, businesses to all thrive in, right?
But think about it. We are now seeing universities around the world offering courses, and one of them that I was invited to teach had a course. They invited me to teach the course, The Miracle of Smart Contract. I mean, smart contracts were invented 20, the concept of smart contracts is almost 30 years old. And now we are talking about smart contracts as a miracle. Well, my entire thinking and the people in this space know we are already, 10 years in the future. I don't see a solution at this point. This is my biggest worry and my biggest area of concern. I don't see a solution to the catching up that there is to do with technological innovation. The projects that I'm witnessing, that I'm involved in, are technically so complex and so advanced that they have no more relationship to the linear development of business strategies. We are still going to, we are sending children and young adults to universities where they are taught the concept of digital marketing. There are courses offered at the University of Economics in Stuttgart and in Vienna and in Zurich about Facebook advertising. The fuck? We need a completely new paradigm of education. If we are ever, as a business, if we ever want to catch up with how fast technology is moving right now.
I have a question. Possibility that, let's just say, in my mind, I'm thinking there could be a downturn in the market. How many people do you reckon are going to stick, and how new is DAG in the system for the initial adopters that have got in to know what they're holding, that they are diversified in other areas not to pull the money out?
So I've kind of hit on this over the past year or so, because DAG is a data token, right? It's bandwidth. And so when the hypergraph is live, I firmly believe that it's going to be not necessarily shielded, but it's not going to be affected like the rest of the markets are going to be. Because, for instance, let's take Alchemy for example, right? They're a digital advertising exchange, right? They're not going to shut down their business. They're not going to shut down their state channel just because Bitcoin shit the bed again, right? Data is going to be flowing through their state channel every second. Now, in a bad market, like how much are advertisers going to still be using that? I don't know. But I know that what Alchemy offers, as opposed to everybody else, again, if you were an advertiser or a publisher, why would you use somebody else when, right off the top, you're saving something like 14% fees. It's reduced, right? I think that they had this the average fees on a traditional advertising exchange is something like 15%, but Alchemy is only going to charge 1.5%. So why would you use somebody else when you can save money right off the bat? And then on top of that, they have this DLT solution that's going to eliminate fraud, which is going to save these advertisers and publishers, you know, millions, potentially billions of dollars. You know, it still blows my mind that fact is true, that advertising fraud is the second largest fraud in the world. I mean, it's insane how rampant it is. But it goes back down to, Facebook and Google and how much money is poured in. And so then you have people that, take advantage of opportunities, because that's where the flow of money is, right? There's billions and billions of dollars, and you know, there's smart people that will take advantage of the system.
But what if, let's say, I think at the moment, hold on, Charlie, I'm on the phone. So if we've got at the moment, hold on, sorry, let me deal with my son, sorry.
I'd like your perspective on this, Martin. I mean, I think right now it's totally subjective, right? I mean, because we don't really know what the world is going to be like on the hypergraph. But in my mind, theoretically, when the hypergraph is live and you have all these state channels running and sending their data, the market with layer zero tokens is going to be, should be affected a little bit differently, right?
I applaud your vision and enthusiasm, and I share the same vision, but we exist in a world where other values are more pertinent, and we have managed to basically fuck up every single technological revolution ever, right? We had the Industrial Revolution and basically created modern slavery in factories, and we invented the internet, and we have created monsters, the likes of Facebook, and we invented NFTs, and we came up with a fucking yacht club and $300 million in profits for Google Labs by selling some other side virtual crap, right? So at the end of the day, it's all about money. And there are two sides to the money discussion. As my Twitter following is growing and I still keep the direct messages open, I get around 30 messages a day from people asking me, where do you think the price of X will be in X months? So I've got this standard answer. I just don't engage with people. But that the vast majority of people are concerned is how much money they can earn from crypto. That's your poor slobs who put in a few quid into a crypto project and then see it go down the drain because they just believe the hype and we're watching some stupid YouTubers who bought a Bentley or whatever. That's a stat. What is criminal is the way venture capital firms are abusing cryptocurrencies as a money-making scheme. How they are usurping, how they are destroying the ideals of a large part of the crypto community and using it for personal gains. So I advise fund managers, and I advise family trusts and stuff, institutional investors. And what it comes down to is money management and wealth creation and profitability. And there is no connection between that side of the aspect of crypto and our idealistic, technocentric, visionary approach to crypto. It's a philosophical problem, and when push comes to shove, it's going to be the Zucker boy metaverse that's going to win out, because billions of dollars are going to flow into Meta with the metaverse. It's going to be the first installment of Google launching some crypto project and some blockchain project, because a security, a company, and a public company with a public figure that can be held accountable and be arrested and thrown into the jail is the only thing the law and an investor understands. The financial markets come down to one single question. Who can I blame when the shit hits the fan? That is the essential question of all finance. So if I make a wrong investment, I have the excuse. Everyone was buying it at that time, so don't fire me. I was just following orders. I was just following the crowd. That's why most analysts on Wall Street are useless, because standing out and having a different opinion is detrimental to your career if things go wrong. Very few people making contrarian decisions and end up being promoted for them. It is psychology, it is the money motive, it is personal motives of career advancement. And in that space, a technocratic, a technological thinking and a love for betterment of society and of charity projects doesn't come into it. When I talk to the first people on for Natura and the idea of an NFT and using it as a CSR project for companies, the discussion ended up with the simple thing: how do I display the NFT? How do I make sure people link the fact that I'm giving to a conservation society in Zimbabwe or whatever? What was it? Botswana. My rhinoceri are in Botswana. How do I link that to the bank that I am or the fund that I am when I display the image of the rhinoceros on my LCD screen in my corporate lobby so I fulfill the requirements of the CSR report so I get a better score and I get more investors buying my stock? This is the big problem. And this is why crypto is getting attacked for being irresponsible, for being hacked and being rug pulled and frauded, because in a rug pull of a protocol, there's no one to arrest. We don't even know where the people are. We don't know what they're called. Many of these projects are undoxed. So you can't have that in finance. You have to find the culprit. You have to see him arrested and let off in handcuffs and thrown into jail and face prosecution. The whole Arthur Hayes thing is a case in point. That just happened last Friday. He got convicted in a court in New York. So crypto is one side. The way Wall Street works and the law works is a completely different universe. How do we unite them? How do you do that?
So crypto is pretty much a seen or could be seen as an absolute dream for the corrupt.
Absolutely.
Ghost, yeah, you got your hand up.
Yeah, actually, I agree fully with Martin. And for example, I try to reach every day some big influencers, and you can chill deck as they just chill their shit coins, and that's pretty bad. Even their Shiba Inu Cam Rocket token, that's pretty bad. Pretty bad. You can't reach them. You can't tell them about use cases. It's crazy.
I thought of going public with this, but I can't for a myriad of reasons. I have a shit list. I talk to so many people and invite so many people onto my conversations with Uphold, because Uphold wants to engage. We want to learn from the community. We want to be responsible in the tokens we list and the approach the company takes. And that's what I was hired for. So I need to contact and speak to thousands of people, and I can shitlist them by niceness, approachability, reaction time. And if I ever were to publish list.
Yeah, well then, you know, and this kind of comes back to what we've talked about a lot of times is, you know, the lack of education and, you know, adequate p- people informing you of what's happening. I don't know if Mr. Putley wants to come up here. I'll invite
Mr. Putley.
But you know, but Alchemy is going to have an Alchemy Academy, and you know that's it.
Yes, we spoke about that. Yeah.
You know, and it's these types of things that is going to advance, you know, crypto forward, because there is a lack of education in the space, right?
You also have to realize that many crypto projects are run and executed by people who have a 9-to-5 daytime job. They do what they do for the love of crypto, for the love of their project, their technology, because they love coding, because they love money, whatever reasons they have. But they do it after hours. They do it after their day job. Whereas the main players in the financial sector, it is their day job to make money. So that leads to the problem that a company like Uphold has to pay salaries to thousands of employees around the world. So there is a board, there is a bottom line, there is an accounting process, there is a responsibility to shareholders. And imagine if I would go to the board and say, let's delist all the worthless tokens and only focus on the really good tokens that nobody trades and where we don't earn any trade commission. So it's this is the disconnect problem here, speaking very frankly. And none of the above is a public statement by Uphold.
Joe Milbo, you got your hand up.
Yes, I also wanted to add some words to the whole educational part. As you also said it, Martin, in the beginning, like there's universities teaching crypto, tokenomics, and all these kinds of stuff. And I'm still studying. I study actually in Munich at the TUM, which are like, They say they're a very good university, but every university lecture I visited from my university about crypto, like, I don't know, I feel like I could have talked to the guy and probably came up with a better solution than how he explained it. And that was just from like listening to Twitter spaces, and not like because I'm overly gifted or something, like just from listening to the space and understanding what's going on. Because like all the education that also goes to them, to the lecturers themselves, is all coming from not actually hands-on work and understanding how crypto works, but like really, really theoretically how it works. That's the one part. And then the other, like, which just brings and pushes the problem for years and years and years to come. And the second part I want to say is about like also a little bit like depressing maybe about technology in general. So like a technology like the internet, which has been around for years, like centuries, and like decades, like it's, or not decades, but like in general, who really knows how the internet works? Who really knows how emails work? Who really knows how banks works? Like all this kinds of stuff that is so important for all of us to understand, like understanding, for example, that if you have the money at the bank, is it really your bank? Stuff that crypto wants to solve with those private keys, not your coins, all this kinds of stuff. We have it for years also in technologies we've been working with for years. And still, like, the educational gap is so huge. And now that the technology speeds up every day, and we say technology will never be that slow, but never be, will never be that slow, but never be that, like, every day will be faster and never as slow as it was today. Like the saying, I always mess it up. I really think it's a huge problem. I just wanted to add like a couple of things also from my personal experience.
Thank you for that. Very, 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 very true. I taught a course at the ETH in Zurich just a couple of months back. And at the end of the seminar, the first question was, where do you think Shiba Inu, where the price of Shiba Inu will be in a year? That's at the ETH. That's Einstein's alma mater. This is the most prestigious education institution in Europe. So there you go. Education. Financial literacy, we have zero financial. If you look at the statistics, only 40% of Germans and Austrians, or I think it's 48 or 52 for Germany, the most financially literate countries are Denmark, Norway, and Sweden.
in the map, you can go on Statistica and look at the maps. One of the lowest financial literacy rates statistically is in the American South and in New York State. I have no idea why it is New York State. I would imagine it to be, you know, some other place in America. But that it might be a statistical anomaly. But less than 50% of the population are financially literate, and the threshold to be financially literate is so low. The quiz that they actually use to determine whether someone is financially literate, that is ridiculously low. If you fail that, you basically have no common sense.
Yeah, I don't think that they, I could be completely wrong, but I don't think that they really teach it in public schools anymore. When I was in high school, my senior year, we had to take a finance class. It was two parts. It was an economics, and then the second semester was a finance part, and that was a required course.
Yeah, there is an education reform going on with the Erasmus program in the EU, and I'm involved with that for different universities. And the discussion is how to create a curriculum that stresses personal financial security and literacy, not in the context of understanding institutions and concepts, but understanding your personal finances, right? How to design the curriculum, and the fact that in 2022 we're discussing how to teach people how to manage their pocket money. And we did surveys with 16 to 25 year olds, and you wouldn't believe the answers you get. What does a bank do with your money? A, keep it in a vault. B, return it to the central bank. C, spend it on public projects. Or D, loan it out to people who to put it to work in an economy. I think less than 15% of people answered the only correct answer in that. Most people said they are using it to pay taxes. So the disconnect between it's getting worse, because where are young people right now? They are in fucking esports competitions and games education is at the core of what cryptocurrency will be and can be, and where we need to catch up.
Jeff, you get your hand up.
Sure. I want to ask the doctor about what his thoughts are on the recent Algorand FIFA partnership, LimeWire partnering with Universal Music Group, Napster, and all the tokenized real estate and tokenization of stocks by Securitize, et cetera, all those other partnerships. What are your thoughts on Algorand for the next year or two?
I'm afraid I cannot comment on Algorand at the moment. I can talk about LimeWire. They're Austrians, and I know the founders behind it, and I'm just talking to them. It's a very interesting project, but I'm sorry, I cannot comment for legal reasons. I cannot talk about Algorand at the moment.
Okay, interesting. Thank you.
So if anybody wants to come up, if you've got a project you want to shill, because at the end of the day, this is going to be an open source network. I'd be happy to hear your idea. Best idea gets 100 DAG. But also the other topic at hand that we're talking about is why Constellation will be a top 10. I believe it'll be a top 10 before people realize it'll be a top 10, because there's literally nothing stopping it.
It's going to be that, you know, the top 10 list that they have on these websites. It's going to be the, where the fuck did that come from moment.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's going to be. People are just going to get absolutely gobsmacked because they're not even focused on it. It is just going to.
Is it only on KuCoin at the moment?
No, it's on KuCoin, Gate.io, the LCX, the Liechtenstein exchange.
Liechtenstein, yes.
Yeah. And then it's also on, I don't remember, you know, I don't remember the name, but there's one in Australia that a lot of the guys from down under use.
So nothing major America at the moment?
At the moment.
That's my biggest problem with the DAG listing and stuff, you know. America has a problem with KuCoin.
But I will say a big underscore, but you will have the ability really, really soon to just buy DAG right from your wallet.
Mm-hmm. Which wallet would that be? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. So right from your Stargazer wallet, you'll be able to buy DAG via Simplex, right? And that's going to be a game changer. Being able to buy DAG directly from your wallet. The other reason why that's such a game changer is if you look at that company, look at how many wallets that's already directly integrated with, right? So DAG is going to... Yeah, so you'll be able to buy DAG right from your Stargazer wallet because Stargazer is integrating with Simplex, right? So there'll be a buy DAG button. Right. So you won't even have to get on the exchange. So that's huge. Right. It's just a direct fiat on ramp. Right. You'll just
by the way, to preempt the backlash. If you look at the number of currencies you can buy in different wallets from different on ramps.
Yes.
One of them is Ramp based in the UK. Then there's Simplex. And Simplex, for many, many currencies, Simplex doesn't have the best rate. But don't be fooled by what the wallet thing displays. The rates, they're hugely inaccurate. You end up, when you, Simplex ends up usually being the cheaper one because the quotation includes all the fees that otherwise come afterwards. I did the numbers on multiple transactions from Kraken and from different wallets. We did an analysis of what we have to show on the on-ramp for Uphold for people to make a choice. And everyone ends up going to MoonPay, but MoonPay quotes the lowest rate, but ends up being the most expensive because they add this
for sure.
Credit card rates afterwards. So it's not a hugely misleading problem that we have of using third-party on-ramp offers.
Do you think, when would that happen? When will you be able to buy it on
Stargazer?
Yeah. After Uphold. Okay.
After Uphold.
That was a very blonde moment, gentlemen.
No, I'm not making any promises.
Uphold better, get out its game real quick, because I can tell you the buying from DAG from Stargazer wallet is going to happen extremely soon.
My flight reservation to London. Oh, Dan, we need to have lunch again.
On top of so I hinted about this the other day, you know, because I showed everyone the GitHub, right, that has the integration, right? And so, yeah, it's great that Stargazer is going to be integrated and you'll be able to buy DAG right from Stargazer, right? But what the majority of the people missed about this integration with Simplex, look at how many wallets Simplex is already integrated with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
how many?
Like, they're a solid company. They're good.
So DAG is going to be accessible to so many different platforms. It's a little ridiculous, right? And then I posted a graph on Monday because I gave everyone a challenge over the weekend to think about why it's bigger than just buying it from Stargazer. And I gave a graph with an example of what happened to Tron, like the Tron coin, when they listed, right? They went up like 58% or something, right? You know, this is big. And then, you know, with respect to the fees, I give you an example from, you know, what I had to deal with in America. So I sold a bunch of stocks in order to get DAG, right? So I sold my stocks and went into my bank. And then from my bank, I went up to KuCoin, right? Because that's the most, you know, way that most Americans do it, right? But then in KuCoin, my funds sat there for a week. I was not allowed to send money from KuCoin for a week. And that absolutely devastated my potential buying power. I could have easily have right now around four times the amount of DAG that I had, because in that week, that's how much the price moved.
How much DAG?
A lot. So then I moved from Coinbase to KuCoin, and you're hit with a fee, right? And then you know, when you buy on KuCoin and then you transfer the KuCoin to the Stargazer, you're hit with a fee.
Yeah. So 30, I think 30 DAG.
Well, I think at the time, you know, last year it was more than that. It was like 250 DAG, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah. So the fees that you're going to get just from buying it right from the wallet, I think, are negligible, right? Because you're going to have it's just the simplicity, right? And you don't have to do all these like hoops and like setting up an account on a crypto exchange.
Now, do you think there's going to be light and ultra light nodes for DAG?
Yeah, so light nodes is something that's been talked about. And I think that there's several state channels that talked about offering light nodes as part of their consensus. You know, we also have Node Army that's building on the network, right? So you'll be able to have co-nodes. I think that they've talked about the barrier would be for them like a minimum 1,000 DAG, which, you know, isn't very much.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And then we can jump onto your node, right? Yeah. The billions that you're holding.
Hey, look, I tried to tell everybody about this when I got my nodes, they were $1,500 a piece.
So that's 250,000, right? For a node.
Correct. Yeah, 250,000 DAG for a node.
Show off. Oh,
wow.
Show off.
Wow.
I wish I had been there back then. I'm a late bloomer too.
Is anybody here going to consensus?
I might. It falls on a time that's sort of inconvenient for me. I might show up on Saturday. I'm still
fair enough.
Up in the air about that.
Well,
so I've got another question. Are we going to get a Constellation yacht pulling up against the Ripple yacht?
I don't think they're that show off. We need to get Ben out of his jeans outfit. He needs to buy what is the, I forgot the brand, the yachting stuff. What is that? Nautica.
Nautica.
We have to dress him in Nautica first.
Yeah, I think so.
Get him out of the jeans.
Yeah, the actual boats and nodes. That would be pretty funny if they got a boat. If Constellation got a big old boat.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the next thing. You know, all of the billionaires like to play that game. They pull up with a bigger yacht next to the other person. You know,
yachts are on sale now.
Oh, great!
Yachts are on sale now. I used to have a boat, a teeny, teeny, teeny boat, which I sold when my dad died. But I regret, I was happy. I got actually a lot of money for it because now yachts are on sale, right? The market is full of Russian boats being sold on the cheap. They do come with a caveat, though. They might get impounded anytime again.
Well, maybe we can all chip in and we can use
it. We can all chip in and get a proper boat.
work it as a timeshare.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a state channel right there. You can set up a state channel.
Don't laugh. That could be a project. A boat in Monaco. And I'm looking to use X Cabin. Yeah.
That actually exists.
Definitely be willing ocean, to pay for ocean, that maritime data. Fisheries. That's for sure.
Maritime data. Fisheries.
Yeah.
That's another constellation. That's another hypergraph project.
Yeah, absolutely.
So much data, tides and water quality and fish stocks. And imagine tracking millions of fish and sardines and swarms. You know how much data that is? They're using it for the salmon fisheries in Norway and in Chile to monitor alkaloids and vitamins and antibiotics and stuff, because basically half the wild salmon sold right now in supermarkets isn't wild at all. You can actually keep them in captivity for years before you release them, and if you release them before you butcher them, then they're called wild salmon. That's marketing, food marketing for you.
That's frightening.
That's frightening, you stupid. Yeah. It's unbelievable the amount of fraud that's going on in the food industry.
Yeah, well, I could talk all day about this. This is great. I hope you guys hold another channel soon. I want to be on the progress.
Yeah. Let's see. I think the next big space that's going to go out is when Ben is going to be on the panel with Real Vision. So that'll be really exciting. Because that'll give us exposure to, you know, quote, all the normies, right? So that's something to look forward to.
So will that be a bigger space with more open advertising?
Yeah, I believe so. Every time that I've seen Real Vision hold a space, they have thousands of listeners, right? Ouch. And yeah, and there's people from every sector listening to those spaces. I mean, they have a large following. So yeah, I think that space is going to be huge for us, and we are super fortunate that we had that opportunity. And part of the reason why we had the opportunity to get on Uphold is because of the community, right? The community showed Real Vision that they should be paying attention to us. Joe Milbo, you got your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, like, whoever doesn't know Real Vision, it's a huge community, and it's like a very mature community. Like, there's a lot of education going on in the community. I've been myself also following them for quite a while, and it's really, really top notch what they also deliver. So this is for everyone not knowing how big of an opportunity this is. I can just say, like, check out what they're doing. This is how education should be, for example, in universities. So I think this will be like a huge step for Constellation.
Can you send me a DM on that? I want to talk to them. I'm interested in that. I also tagged them. We need to plan August. I want the whole of August. I'm reserving for Constellation at Uphold. It needs to be August because we are waiting on some technical stuff that's not going to be done in time. But I'm thinking of doing a whole host of just only Constellation-focused events, including live events. I'm just starting to plan that, and I'm a little bit depending on the progress of the tech department. But I need input and suggestions of what we could do and who we want to invite, and a list of people and everything.
You should. Are you gonna? So speaking of August, are you coming to the event in San Diego?
I can't go to consensus, unfortunately, because my mom has surgery at the time and I can't leave her. And it's, I'm going to Toronto in August. When is San Diego again?
August 6th.
August 6th, yeah. The idea I had with Ben was to do something there, but I still don't have you know, there's so many moving pieces in a company like Apple, and it's not that easy coordinating everything. But I'm thinking about doing that in San Diego, yeah. That would be awesome. We have a big team in California. We have a lot of people in California for whom, you know, for me, it's also, I want to reduce the environmental impact at Uphold. So I don't want to fly all the time, long distance in airplanes. I want to send to people who are like an hour's drive away rather than me flying 9,000 kilometers across the ocean for a event. So that's another consideration. But then I have to find the people who live closest. So that's.
Do you get to fly business?
What do you mean business?
Do you get to fly business class across the ocean? Because I might take the job. Depends if the hours are okay.
I fly in the plane. What is business class? You mean there's people behind the curtain?
this space is recorded. I would use several words right now.
That was the poshest sentence ever uttered in the Twitter space. I got this. I was working for an interior designer in Hong Kong, a millionaire for a while, as a global speaker for the company, so years ago. And he told me that. He said that phrase. And the whole first class cabin had a laugh. He said it out loud. He said, "What? There are people behind the curtain." I apologize for anyone.
I now just know my space.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't fly. You know, the normie seats. It's just too uncomfortable for me. You know, I'm 6'4", and I absolutely loathe flying.
I don't do it anymore. It used to be fun. It's not fun anymore. Going through airports, God, that's a nightmare. I'm so happy I have Zoom and my web connection.
Hey, speaking of first class, I've got kind of a funny story for you guys. So coming back from the Miami event, I'm sitting on you know, the flight is boarding. We changed terminals, and so there was kind of like a shuffle. And I look up, and Michael Brand gets in his seat right next to me. And then so I was like, "Oh wow, that's pretty crazy." And I said, "I thought you were flying with Ben." I said, "Where's Ben?" And then he's like, "Yeah, there was no more first class tickets." And then so I looked behind me, and there was Ben in the regular seats. it was too funny. Poor Ben. I don't know why they waited so long to get their tickets, but that was pretty funny. So I had a good conversation with Michael Brand and enjoyed.
I recently came back from London, and going through Heathrow was just hideous. Just the whole.
Oh my God!
It's just. I mean, I missed my plane because they closed the security, and you had to go all the way around, and then I missed the plane, and then they said you've got to pay for that. And I'm like, "Well, it's not my fault." And they're like, "Well, actually," I'm like, "Do you know what? Just someone shoot me now, because this is hideous."
You know, one of the most
fully agree, absolutely. Yeah,
one of the worst airport experiences I had is when I went to France recently. So I flew into Charles de Gaulle, right?
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Like you have to go, like each terminal like you take the little light rail to the different ones, but then you have to go through security all over again. That doesn't make any kind of sense.
Good day, good day. How's everyone doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty well. Nice to see this happening. Do you mind if I quote unquote shill my life, my company?
Let's do it. Let's hear it.
Cool. Memora, M-E-M-O-R-A, comes from the word memorabilia or memorable. And memorabilia means worthy of remembrance. So Memora is focused on creating tokens that are worthy of remembrance. We specialize in creating different NFT types to cater to specific assets. Our first asset is a collectible card. And I realized, even though I'm in the States, that doesn't mean I'm a banked fella. I can't go to my bank and get a loan on my Pokemon card. So we're creating a DeFi protocol connecting NFTs and memorabilia to bank the unbanked.
Where can we find more about Memora?
Yeah, I'd welcome you to look up Memora Official on Twitter or join us on Telegram at Memora Official. We're doing an AMA tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. I welcome you all to join Telegram and ask away.
And when are you guys launching?
Currently, we're testing in the sandbox environment for Constellation Network, and we're building our first bridge to Near protocol, of which we received a grant from them to develop, and we will be launching in quarter three of this year and beginning to onboard beta testers in the next 3 weeks to optimize our launch with the Constellation Network.
Oh, that's fantastic. So how did you hear about Constellation?
I don't know exactly how I came across Constellation Network, but I realized that why are we paying gas when there's no oil? Or so ever since then, I guess I just gravitated to Constellation Network and fell in love. So I've just been trying to understand what it means. And yeah, it's awesome. It makes sense. Pure data dependent network.
Here we go, Memora. And so how are you affiliated with Memora?
Yeah, sure thing. I founded the company and I'm currently the CEO there. Mm-hmm. And we are participating in the accelerator program with Constellation Network. And we're looking forward to pitch in August and shortly after do a little public sale to get things rolling.
Nice. Do you guys have like a demo?
We are currently building one, and it'll be ready fully operational in about 4 weeks. But I'll tell you honestly, my background isn't in technology, but I had to dabble in Web 2, dabble in Web 3, and now I know what I want to make. So here we are.
And so you guys are just tokenizing memorabilia, is that right? So you're just like creating an NFT?
Correct. We're tagging and classifying the NFT, and there's a couple more bells and whistles, but yeah, that's it. So we're going to be working with ADS ads tokens pretty closely. My vision is to create infrastructure for social interaction, but beginning with financial value so that we can create communities of individuals who like Pokemon or so on and so forth, and to kind of move forward as a community into the social paradigms.
Is it like fractionalization?
That is one component of what you can do with your NFT, but we are partnered with Brink Security, so we're developing our own solutions to secure assets and to eventually fractionalize, so yes.
Oh, fantastic. So for those interested in Memora and what they're doing, I tweeted out and I posted a link. So it'll be up at the top of the space, and there's a direct link to their Telegram. And you said that you guys are trying to get started in quarter three, you said?
Yeah. Fully launch. Quarter three, and we'll be doing beta test applications in about 2 to 3 weeks. If not sooner, we'll have a Google form out there so people can get on, and we'll be in touch.
That's nice. Fantastic. Great.
And it's not a rug pull.
Hey. It's not going to be a rug pull because we're regulated utility.
Okay.
We're not a security token, man. We're not a utility token. We're in the middle. We're a
perfect. And just, token, hey, listen, straight down the line.
It's fully regulated, so no, sir.
No rugs. I'm waiting for somebody to open up like a rug emporium on the Hyperdraft.
The only rug is a Persian rug, my friend.
I wonder if you could create a project called Rug Pull and see how many people would get involved.
I bet you they would. I mean, look how many people bought cummies.
and look at Luna today. Luna's up.
Yeah, Luna's up because they're offering the burn at so like anybody that wants to burn, like I think what's his nuts posted the link to the address, but
what's his nuts did you just say?
Yeah. Duquan. Duquan posted a link to the token burn address, but you know, just my opinion on that is, you know, I think that they're done, you know, and that's just my thoughts on it. I was reading,
if I made my two cents, I was reading a paper on synthetic commodities, and that's how I've defined Bitcoin. It doesn't really exist, but it does exist. But then you get to DeFi paradigms, and if there's no like core bases on the Bitcoin or the holdings that you have, it's really gonna be another Luna and be another situations as such. So with a DAG, it's so different because DAG is backed by the whole network, and DeFi on DAG is just gonna be insane.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, and that's one of the things that sort of turned me off to Luna to begin with. Like I just didn't really, it wasn't really backed by anything when I started looking at it last year, and none of it made any sort of sense to me, so I stayed away. If it doesn't really make sense to me, I tend not to invest in anything that doesn't make much sense to me. And nobody could explain to me Luna and how it wasn't you know, like a sort of Ponzi-nomics you know, pyramid thing. So, you know, I stayed out. Same thing with Strong. I stayed away from Strong.
Robert Hand.
And the dog's barking. And this Memora project, how do we invest? How do we look at, is there a white paper out? Is there a more of a clear defined so we can read up about it?
Sure. So I will upload and make our one pager slash our manifesto public this week. But we do have a light paper created. I made it back in August, and I'll make sure to post it in our Telegram chat. But in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we will start to unveil what we've been working on and make it public. In the future, about 2 to 3 months down the line, once we have everything situated with respect to the regulatory clearance for our token slash security, as well as our MVP and technological infrastructure and community management, so on and so forth, we're going to be doing a public raise on Chainraise. So looking forward to that, working with Corey and the gang. And I might add one thing. It's been an honor to not have accepted a single dollar from VC or individuals who want to get a large portion of the pies. Therefore, we are going to be able to service and offer this security token to collectors versus the traditional route of finance.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I'm super stoked. Look forward to the progress that you guys have. And again, I don't want to delete the space. Yeah, I posted my tweet
So you get, there's the link to the Momora official, and then also in the tweet is the link to your guys' Telegram account.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to share my words, and I hope you guys have a fantastic Sunday.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
Aloha. Goodbye.
Yeah, NFTs, I think, you know, are going to be game changing. You know, and I've talked about this for about a year now, even before, you know, like the Void, for instance. You know, the utilities. So NFT, yeah, there's always going to be like a Bored Ape kind of a deal, but that's missing the boat, right, on the broader aspect of, you know, what's possible with NFTs. You know, you can put a security on an NFT. You can, you know, NFT your car. You can NFT your house. You know, that to me, I think, is going to be one of the driving factors to mass adoption. You know, using NFTs at any of these retailers. So NFTs are going to be so massive in our day-to-day life. That's where I see things happening in the short term.
I see, and I think anyone in the space will see a pattern of how a project starts to move around, and the initial token, and then it goes from one exchange or it goes on to another and it gets more reputable. And, you know, once I start to see the NFTs come out on the project, I kind of go, that's kind of like an aha moment for me, because after the NFTs come out and can get burnt onto that chain, you then start to think, well, where are NFTs going next? And I think we've all talked about, well, brought to the attention the Bored Apes of this world, but is it going to go to that car title, house title, insurance and healthcare and so on and so forth? And even fractionalization, where I was speaking to someone a while back talking about, and I mentioned whiskeys because I said, oh, what about if I put my whiskey up for adoption that has to sit in a certain room, which is not my own anymore? And then you can fractionalize it for the acceptance of that moving forward, for your tokens to be able to gain in value because it's pegged to something of value. And I think that's the next stage that I'm kind of waiting for. And where is that next stage of NFT value? Because it seems to me that there are a lot of projects out there that all have the NFT capability, but when's it going to make that next jump?
When there's actual utility attached to the NFT. And unfortunately, we're still early, right? But then once you have this mechanism or layer that the hypergraph is capable of, you're going to start to see, you know, businesses use NFTs in all the ways that we've talked about in this space, because it's going to make sense, and it's going to make, and it's going to be economically feasible. Like for somebody like a big, I'll just use like Chipotle, for example, right? If they wanted to like airdrop 1 million burrito NFTs, like that wouldn't even be possible right now. The amount of money that it would cost is sort of mind boggling, but I'm sure Chipotle would love to airdrop burrito NFTs to everybody to be able to redeem for, you know, a free burrito.
Like the McDonald's scratch off. I mean, apparently I've never been to McDonald's, clearly.
Yes.
But
yes.
They had a scratch off at one point.
Yeah. Or look at what McDonald's did with the Monopoly game way back when, with like the scratchers, right? It was just a way to keep people in their loyalty, right? And to get more people going to McDonald's, right? And so NFTs, I mean, that's just one use case. The transferable titles is another use case. I mean, NFTs, there's literally limitless use cases. But, you know, I also see, and I think Martin and I talked about this earlier in this space, you know, with the hypergraph, you can have true utility without a token and without like a currency. Like you don't
I think the first application for NFTs on a larger scale is going to be real estate, because there are no privacy problems, there's no legal problems, there's no healthcare data problems. And it's relatively easy to move a land registry database onto an NFT basis. There are projects that involve giving you a virtual representation of your mansion, of your house in the metaverse. You can rent out spaces for virtual events in the metaverse, but you also own the NFT if you want to buy the actual house that it is associated with. You can move ownership with it. So that is in a legal space that is relatively uncomplicated in terms of regulation and privacy risks. That's and there, the price of minting the NFT on Ethereum doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter if you spend $1,000 or $2 to mint an NFT for a house that's worth $100,000, $400,000. So that, I think, is the first big adaption. But as you rightly said, for all the other stuff, like retail NFTs, like everyone's trying them out now. The art world, too. I'm speaking to the British Museum and to a company called Ode3 in San Francisco. I think it's O2 Labs or O3 Labs. They're looking at artworks, NFTs as artwork. So you've got your painting and you've got the title of ownership to a valuable painting, and the ownership is an NFT. So that's also a space where the cost of minting the NFT doesn't come into it. It's negligible compared to the value of the underlying asset. That's not the case with a Big Mac or a cheeseburger.
I think property is a no-brainer. I deal with the Department of Building and Landmarks in Manhattan on a constant basis. And after you start pulling the information off of the Department of Building, I mean, anyone can go on the Department of Building and register and take the information off of the DOB Now system and find out exactly what is going on with the certificate of occupancies with any of the buildings in Manhattan. And that in itself, to be on the blockchain, is just, that would be a no-brainer, or the DAG, that would be a no-brainer for me, because anyone can register and go online. Very interesting.
Joe Milbo.
Yes, thank you. Yes, so I also want to add something about like NFTs in general, because I think we are at a very dangerous point right now in NFTs, which I would already, like, I would even say we are stuck, because we can't go mainstream. Like, the people who understand NFTs say this is going to change the world. But at the same time, we all see that we can't go mainstream with this. Like, how can you onboard someone if you say, okay, so you will get something on the blockchain, but in order to get it to you, I wanted to send it to you for free. I will airdrop it, but you have to claim it for $25. Or like, okay, you can then send it to me, but it costs $50. Okay, like, we can make an NFT together, but it will cost $200. Like, all these fees in between just favors the rich. And as you also said, Martin, it will definitely push areas like, it makes sense in NFT, maybe even on Ethereum for houses. But at the same time, if we put all the houses on Ethereum, the whole like other side will be like a small joke we laugh about, like, because real land on Ethereum will never work. And I think also Eric has now his hands on, so I'm more than pleasure to give him the word on finishing with the void.
Hey, everyone. First of all, Homilbo is my homie. Love that guy. First of all, hey, everyone. How's it going? Haven't been on one of these spaces in a while. Been pretty busy in the void. Wink, wink. Haha, no pun intended. Yeah, one of the things I wanted to actually mention was, you know, it's not just the fees to generate or create an NFT. I think one of the things that we don't speak about very often are also things like distribution costs. And Dagnam, I know you touched on that lately the other day. Like, you know, well, what if I wanted to send, you know, 1,000 Chipotle NFTs for a free burrito to all my people? that's something that we're definitely tackling. And when we're talking to the different brands in the various industries in which we are, whether it is fashion and retail or food and beverage or so on, that's one of the major use cases that we see that will push NFTs to mainstream, which is driving demand for certain products or services with an NFT and turning your customer base into a valuable community with NFTs, because customers inherently aren't connected to each other, but communities are, and you can create more value as a business for yourself by turning your customer base into a community, and NFTs are the perfect vehicle for that. So when we're talking to these other businesses and they're thinking about what they want to do with an NFT, I'll give you just like a cool example, and this is not a literal one, but let's say hypothetically you owned, let's say you were the Cheesecake Factory. I don't know if anyone's ever eaten at the Cheesecake Factory. And they had a special cheesecake in the front of the store or the front of the restaurant that you could only have a piece of that if you owned their NFT. And then they had a secret menu. And then they had all these exclusive things that you can only access if you could prove or show that you owned this NFT. That sense of exclusivity is something that is very, very valuable, that people want to be a part of, that people want to join that community simply because only I can have it because I'm part of this community. So one of the things that we're working on is basically going after these loyalty programs where it's not loyalty in the sense of like discounts anymore, but it's loyalty in the form of exclusivity. And I think that's something that NFTs, especially creating NFT gated communities or products or services, is one of the things that will bring NFTs into the mainstream that we're working on, like I said, with The Void, because we not only solve the issue obviously on the crazy fees that it costs to generate an NFT, but also from the distribution angle as well. So I think that will be some of the new, I guess, big push with NFTs, because I do agree with you, Josh. It is kind of like the NFT space is kind of stuck with the current technology and what's capable based on what currently is. And we're truly looking to usher in a new era with NFTs.
Right. So it's like brand VIP. So you can get those off-white Nikes that, only those NFT holders have, right? And then so people are going to be like, oh, fuck, where did you get that? And be like, well, bro, I got this NFT.
Yeah, I was part of this really awesome exclusive Nike community. And not only do I get these awesome shoes, but I got invited to a party, an exclusive dinner for everyone that was here. And if you had the NFT, you could have showed up at this event, you could have done this, you could have done all these awesome, fun and exclusive things if you have an NFT. And it's not industry specific. It can be fashion, it can be retail, it can be food and beverage, it can be consumer packaged goods, it can be high-end fashion, luxury and retail, it can be any of these things. And I think exclusivity is the next big wave. And then I know I think it was Vitalik that also mentioned something recently called soulbound tokens. And these are essentially non-transferable NFTs. And this is actually a transaction type that we're also building essentially into the Void State channel, which is where you can create an NFT that is inherently non-transferable or send an NFT that is non-transferable. And the example that he used was for something like a diploma or a certification or a license. And these would be non-transferable NFTs that have real utility or purpose, or they can be something like a receipt or a proof of experience NFT, something that proves that you've done something. And these could be shown as well. So these are all different types of NFT use cases that, like I said, aren't industry specific. They can be used across various different industries or sectors. And this is what I believe will be one of the next big waves in NFTs, along with also what Martin spoke about with real estate, which is one of the areas that I think is also going to flourish in the next 2 to 3 years with NFT technology.
Absolutely. We are so incredibly early, and it's going to be amazing to see all the things that are possible because of the Hypergraph and its data specific network I think Ghost, you had your hand up.
Oh yeah. I would like to see the NFTs when it comes to elections. I mean, think back to this whole Trump-Biden election shit show, what happens? That was pretty huge. And maybe somebody of you can make a flight program with a voter NFT.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about that. I talked about that last year, like early last year, I think. I'll try to dig up the tweet. But yeah, NFTs, that would be a great way to eliminate any doubt in voter fraud, right? And it's something that, you know, you could do from your phone, you know, so you wouldn't have to, you know, make your way to the election poll or anything. You could just do it right from your phone.
You can't even get voting machines work right. And you're thinking of people vote with an NFT. Jesus Christ, I see the Twitter headlines. Stolen elections! NFT stole my vote. Make America fungible again.
I just literally laughed out loud. That was Make America Fungible Again is actually really funny.
This is going to be my new slogan. Make America Fungible Again.
Make America Fungible Again. Oh my goodness.
That is really good. That is gold. That is really, really good.
That is good. Oh man. Make America Fungible Again. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible.
Tweet that hashtag Mafa.
Mafa. Let's do it. Tweet it out. I'm going to retweet that space. R space Mafa. Yeah, but you know, that's definitely a use case. I don't know if it will be implemented. You know, because then you get into the sticky situation with power and politics, and you know.
Well, you know what's interesting about this topic as well is, because I mean, it seems kind of like a no-brainer, right? Well, yeah, put everything on a, you know, transparent blockchain, or in this case, a hypergraph, right, where it's like you can see everything. There's an audible trail. Yeah, no-brainer. But then the challenge becomes, well, how do you get all of these people to, how do you assign them with a token ID number? Or where does this NFT live? You know, the logistics around setting that system up are difficult. I mean, you know, it's difficult enough as it is trying to get a non-crypto native person, you know, onboarded into Web3.
That's already one step too far.
Yeah.
The problem is, how do you convince Mrs. Winterbottom from the village of Chatbury to trust a machine to count her vote versus Erica from the grocery store who is volunteering to count her votes, right? And then you're telling her your vote is going to be an NFT now. Oh my God, no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. As much as I love the idea, I feel like, one, you're right, Martin. One, convincing people that this is now a safer, more transparent way is going to be, we are years and years and years away, I think, from something like that. And then you have, you know, who has access to this technology?
It is a problem that we are getting so caught up in technology, and we are of a mindset. Many people in crypto, especially we in this space, we're of a mindset where we understand technology and in a way trust it implicitly. We have the intelligence to trust the technological solution, while the majority of people work on a human-to-human trust basis, right? The entire discussion about blockchain is based on the principle of trust. So, and trust is still, from political organizations to your family ties to your friends, trust is a human connection. And to replace parts of that human interaction with a machine or an algorithm or a blockchain is for many, many, for most people, one step too far at this point in time.
Well, I think some of that is a generational thing. Yeah, yes, and I, yeah, and I don't see it happening necessarily overnight, but you know, as time goes on, you know, the younger kids, you know, they get it, right? And those are going to be the people that are going to drive this adoption. But yeah, it for other people, it's a bridge too far.
I've thought about this a lot. I'm writing a book that I will call The Philosophy of Blockchain. And I've looked into that. I think it is, yes, it is a generational conflict. But it is not necessarily always generational. It is a matter of what forms you as a human being. Some of us grow up in an environment, in a loving environment where trust is taken for granted. You have a safe childhood, you have a safe home, you go to a proper school, you learn that trust is a given. For millions of people in this world, they grow up without being able to rely on a social network, on a family, without any understanding of trust. They don't trust anyone. If you look at the third world, if you look at less developed countries, but even in our own countries, you have segments of society that do not, they don't trust their own mother, let alone an NFT. So it's not necessarily a generational problem. It is also a societal problem. It depends on who you are and how you grew up. Not all young people will embrace technology.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, everybody's life experience is different. And I think some people just sort of, take it for granted.
We are getting carried away sometimes. Yeah. I'm not talking about cryptocurrencies. I'm talking about technology in itself.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many examples from the Apple AirTags being used to locate children, to fall prey to abuse, from the fact that we have discovered NFTs being used as proof of ownership in human trafficking cases. There are so many things that if you are in the technology space and you understand the technology, you tend to overlook the unexpected outcomes that technology sometimes brings. I mean, look at the dolls, the speaking dolls connected to a home speaker that can spy on you and spies on the children. So it's wonderful technology, but then you realize, oh my God, somebody can hack into my child's doll. And watch and take videos of my young daughter playing with the doll, right? So unfathomable consequences that nobody who is truly involved in the tech space often sees. You know, we don't see that coming. We are so enthralled by the possibilities of technology that we completely underestimate the potential for abuse and misuse of technology.
Right, and then that goes into the slippery slope that most of crypto doesn't like, regulation, right? And, you know, personally, this is just my personal private opinion. I don't necessarily see regulation as a bad thing, because regulation can protect people from instances just like what you're talking about. I mean, you need to have rules and regulations and laws, because if you don't, that's where things run amok and you have like a Lord of the Flies situation.
Exactly. That's the whole problem with the DAOs. Most people asking for regulation think that we are talking about the regulation of financial instruments. The entire discussion in Europe about banning unhosted wallets was exclusively about money laundering. Now, the fact that Ukraine accepts crypto donations that go directly to the Ministry of Defense and were used to buy weapons is in itself a problem. We have the wherewithal, we have the means to weaponize, to armor a state. And with that, we have the ability to armor an insurgent group and a terrorist group. And so regulation has very little to do with financial instruments and very much to do with the risks and crime and organized crime. And we need regulation for that, but we don't want it for our private finance. It's not going to happen. Regulation, if regulation happens, then it happens across the board.
Yeah, and I think the number one thing too with all of this, and Martin, this probably goes back to the unintended consequences of technology or new technology, is anything that can be exploited will. And yep. I think that is so prevalent in crypto. And yeah, I think we do like to, you know, more so focus on the positive side and you know, what's capable and all these amazing things that we might be able to do with this new technology and the different applications and use cases. But we very often forget about all the ways in which we could, you know, there are unjust or illegal outcomes from them as well. And just because you're not thinking about that doesn't mean there are entire groups or populations of people who are. And we see this very often in, you know, especially in the NFT space and all the scams and rug pulls and things that go on. And I think when it comes, my two cents on the regulation is, I think what's worse is it's not this, you know, and I don't know what they're going to do with regulations, but it's almost like being in this gray area of not knowing what they're going to do with regulations is worse for the space, because it sidelines a lot of people. There's a lot of this unknown, which creates a lot of fear, which definitely stalls progress. And it's like one day we're going to have to rip the Band-Aid off and at least try to move forward.
Yeah. I'm involved with Digital Euro Association and with the MiCA regulations in Europe. And basically the speech pattern of every single council meeting that we have is, I get your point, you're absolutely correct, comma, but. And right. Then there's objections from every single aspect you can imagine. You know, the discussion, there was a 2-month discussion about what threshold should be set for monitoring transactions on unhosted wallets, until somebody came in and said, you don't even know how you want to monitor that. That is so much data. There's so many transactions that you don't have the personnel, you don't have the agency, you don't have the money to monitor what you are trying to monitor. And if you can't monitor it, you can't measure it. If you can't measure it, you can't regulate it, right? So we're getting back to the data problem. Maybe there is a solution in the hypergraph that solves the agency problem in regulation.
I think my theory on that is that it's going to somehow go back to ESG. I don't know why. I just feel like that's going to be the thread, or I guess theme, that brings it all together.
Yes. ESG, the wonderful thing about ESG is that it is comprehensible. It is something that existing actors in a corporation can understand. It falls under their remit. It falls under their competence, so they can deliver the reports, they can collect the data and say, our factory in this or that location has that much impact on the quality of water in our area. There's a department for that, an existing department for that. So you collect all these outputs from all these departments and you get an ESG report. That's doable right now, whereas most of the other things in the regulation discussions are not even doable right now.
So funny story here. One of our engineers worked for one of the world's largest publishing companies. And there was a meeting that they had recently. I'm talking like probably almost 2 months ago. And that meeting was around NFTs. And the whole meeting, the whole time, the only thing they spoke about in regards to NFTs as a corporation were ESG issues.
Yes.
It was the only correct thing they spoke about. And then, just another example, another very large retail company that we spoke to recently, these people sold 18 million units of their product in the last, I think, 7 years. One of the major questions they had for us were around ESG issues. Mm-hmm. And I think, Tony and, Martin, obviously, with your experience having these discussions, that is, I think, one of the largest angles in which corporations or businesses of all size will need to consider moving into the space, because they also don't want to get in trouble with, certain PR issues as well. I mean, just outwardly look, the way people view these companies.
Yeah. The previous company that I used to work for was kind of travel related. I worked in their finance department, and although it's not a requirement fully yet in terms of ESG, I explicitly had to fill out numbers and data in terms of a form that goes into a certain software that has some sort of calculation in terms of ESG. I didn't get to see the final number and kind of what the output of it was, but there's companies out there that are building kind of the input template of various data points out footprint and kind of trying to create almost like a marketplace out of that. So it's definitely in the works, and I have firsthand kind of exposure with filling out some of that data, which I was like, I don't see how exactly what I'm providing is gonna give some number in the end, but it's all in the works. And so it's really interesting to follow and kind of see how, from an NFT perspective, I mean, data, it's complex data, right? It's complex data. And I feel like there's going to be kind of some moment of clarity when, companies really kind of put these pieces together. So
what many people forget about ESG, that it stands for E, S, and G, environment, societal impact, and governance. The governance part is actually more important, because that's exactly the reason why you just said the discussion ends up about governance. The environmental part is relatively easy, right? Any company can prove their environmental impact. It's just a matter of collecting basic data, whereas governance issues are much more complicated. ESGs will bring down most of the DAO projects that we have now.
The only concern I really have with it is any kind of arbitrary nature of kind of social governance. I hear in California, they for a short while tried to make it a requirement for every company's board of director to have a certain number of people at, from certain backgrounds, which was, it's like, how many Afro Latinx are you going to find, for example, to be part of your board of director, right? It's like, there's some arbitrary nature of it,
There is token. Remember South Park, the black guy called Token? That is a feature in governance. Absolutely, yeah.
Martin, I had a question. You may know this, you may not. You said that, a lot of these DAO projects will fail the, I guess you could say, governance sniff test. The governance aspect of ESG will bring a lot of these DAOs down. What are your thoughts, and have you heard any discussions around people trying to obfuscate or avoid some of these ESG issues by going through foreign entities, whether through Caymans, BVI, Singapore? Mm-hmm. Have you heard any discussions around how to navigate those, or how do you regulate those bodies?
The at the core of it is counterparty risk and legal and personal responsibility. If you can't, if you can't arrest the person who is in charge of it, if you can't find them, then you have a governance problem.
in the eyes of the law, there is a natural person and there's a legal person. But in, behind every legal person is a natural person. All of our laws, all of the way our societies work is based on the ideal, on the idea of a real life human being. Taking that, bringing that towards a technological solution of a voting system of unknown entities in an other in an otherwise verified doubt, that's where the legal problems lie. And lawyers just can't be bothered with changing their mindset. You know, becoming a lawyer, learning the law, working in the law is already an enormous effort of gathering knowledge. And to now enter the space where we discuss removing responsibilities and powers from a natural person and moving it towards a technological solution, they're just not ready for that. It's so hard to find lawyers in the state, in Europe, anywhere, lawyers who are willing to engage in that, who have an understanding of the underlying technologies. You know, we might be in blockchain and the next generation might learn blockchain in school, but the lawyers who are the backbone of our of societal governance, they don't have time to learn new concepts, right? So this is why it's going to take so long. There is a reason why Wyoming is the only place that recognizes DAO as a legal entity. We are light years away from making this a nationwide standard, right? And the only reason why Wyoming does it is because they ran out of money. Because with COVID, they don't have enough tourists, so they invented the DAO, the Wyoming DAO.
When in doubt, DAO it.
When in doubt, DAO it.
When in doubt, DAO.
We come up with a lot of great phrases here.
Yeah,
don't doubt it.
And make America fungible. No, I think. Yeah, I think. I think Texas is another one that's working towards that, and then I believe Florida as well. There's several states in the states.
Maybe there's a snowball effect. Maybe I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, and then I think actually, believe it or not, I was actually shocked about this. I think California is working towards that.
No, that's a shock.
Yeah, the governor. Maybe it was like about a month ago. Yeah, I was absolutely shocked that they were considering adopting crypto.
That would not have happened under Governor Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Arnold would not have allowed the DAO. No, it's a nightmare. The DAO.
The Dominator.
The Dominator. Oh my gosh.
The Dominator.
I also would imagine from, you know, state to state, it's like no one wants to be last. You know, I feel like there's this interesting assumption that, like, you know, have it being proved yet that everyone is that Web3 is the direction and that that's where everyone's going. So whether it's figured out or not, or, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, let's find a way to get into Web3. And it's like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. I mean, that's a lot of the conversations we're having with people. It's like, they have no idea what they want to do, how they want to do it with NFTs, but they know they have to get involved somehow.
Yeah.
And so whether
the problem of Web3 is, again, a philosophical problem, right? Web3 is about privacy and giving control back to the individual. Governments don't want to give control back to you, and corporations don't want to give control back to you. So Web3 might be hugely distorted in its ultimate outcome, in its ultimate form, right? Don't know if we will get there too fast, right? We fucked up the internet with Facebook and Google, so how
what will fuck up DAOs and NFTs.
I also think what would be just helpful, like, okay, like what regulation could we come out tomorrow, or not even regulation, what framework could we come out tomorrow that everyone could start to abide by would be, okay, what, because, you know, decentralization, it's not black or white. It's a, you know, it's a sliding scale spectrum, I would say, where something is seemingly more or less decentralized based on a number of factors. If we could come out with like the golden standard for decentralization, I think that just on a very basic level with some guidelines or framework for people to follow would at least be the helpful benchmark or North Star that we need in order to continue progressing.
The markets in crypto assets is probably going to be the first workable solution to regulation. That the problem is that the advantage of Europe is that the European Union is organized in a way that Brussels makes the laws, and all the nation states, the member states of the EU, have to implement them. Whereas in America, every state is going to have their own solution, and it's going to take years of wrangling before you get a nationwide solution.
So we need to move to Wyoming,
or move to Zurich, or move to Europe. we all end up in Wyoming. Oh fuck, I forgot the name again. What is the capital of Wyoming? Cheyenne. But that was it. Yeah.
I was actually looking at Wyoming.
I went to Wyoming on my way to Jackson Hole.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so beautiful.
And I went to see where Ang Lee, I lived in Taiwan at that time, at my then partner's school professor was a schoolmate of Ang Lee, who was the director of Brokeback Mountain. So we went to Colorado, and then we drove up to Wyoming to see where they shot Brokeback Mountain, only to realize that Brokeback Mountain was filmed in Canada, in Banff, Canada.
No way.
It was filmed in Canada. It doesn't look anything like Wyoming.
No way. That is a phenomenal story. We go to Wyoming, I believe, next spring.
To make a DAO?
Let's do a DAO.
Let's do the Constellation DAO registered in Wyoming.
Yeah.
Comes with a free Brokeback Mountain NFT and your complimentary rock ball.
As a service, of course.
As a service, of course. Rock ball as a service. RAS.
RAS. RAS. Yeah.
RAS. RAS.
Someone has a pitch deck of somewhere with that. He's hands down.
Sure. They will now. Someone is taking notes in this space.
Someone just submitted a project to the flight program.
The RAS. Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm gonna open up in the void the rug emporium. it's gonna have a collection of all the crypto rugs.
I'm gonna get a text from Dagnum like, "Why did you delist me?" Why? What was wrong with the project?
Can you imagine the headlines? An NFT of a rug pull sold for 100 ETH.
Oh.
On open rug.
Open rug. Oh my goodness.
I have a PA now. my own personal assistant. He listened into the first Twitter space and he came back and said, "Fuck, Twitter spaces are so underrated."
Oh yeah.
I think
it's like a pop-up live podcast with anyone that wants to join. These things are wild.
These things are wild. And you know, yeah, they are hands down the best thing about Twitter. You know.
Yeah,
I think they are. It like feels like sitting in a conversation in a room in a pub, having a conversation like where we're all sitting, God knows where.
Yeah.
Yeah, so true. Oh man.
What happened to Clubhouse? Is it gone? Is it dead? Or...
I only joined one. I don't know. You know what's funny? I don't even know if everyone in here who knows of Twitter Spaces or have ever joined a Twitter Space even knows what Clubhouse is. That was Twitter Spaces. Well, you know.
You had to get invites. There were limited invites. There was a Clubhouse rug pull, right? There were agents selling invites to Clubhouse for thousands of dollars. That was the biggest rug pull.
Rugged by Twitter. Rugs by Twitter. Yeah, I mean, I remember having a couple of those invites myself and joining one of those. But back then, I thought it was kind of stupid. I'm not even going to lie. I was like, what? I was like, this just seems like a big entrepreneur self-help party. It was just like, I don't know.
But to get back to crypto project, that is exactly what is wrong with 90% of the crypto projects out there. People getting so fanatical about their token and their technology, they all think they invented sliced bread. They don't look at the competition. If you invented Clubhouse, did nobody think how easy it was for the incumbent dominant social platforms to just create an audio space?
Yeah.
They raised in venture capital for people believing, oh my God, this is so fantastic. We're going to dominate the world of social media with that. No, you're not, because the people who already have all the audience, just for them, it only takes two or three software engineers to implement Twitter Space, and gone you are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Twitter, Vine. Yep. I was just about to say that. Yeah, that happened with Vine. Vine was awesome. And then Twitter rugged them. And then
Instagram did. Instagram came out with video.
It was Instagram. Yeah, but then and then TikTok came out, and the rest is sort of history.
I can't believe how serious TikTok is taken. How seriously people take TikTok. It's a documented Chinese spyware that sends data from your phone. There is proof. There is evidence of that. use it like there's no tomorrow. I have a million followers on TikTok. You have a million people who sent their private data and their phone usage data to a server somewhere in China. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's comical. It's always fun. It makes me laugh how absurd it is.
There's a reputable marketing agency in the States that I used to work with that is offering TikTok courses.
What the fuck?
Yeah, well, what's crazy to me about TikTok is the algorithm is completely different here than it is in China. You know, in China, the stuff that gets promoted is like educational content. But like here, it's like twerking videos.
Mm-hmm. That's just your feed. That's just what the algorithm knows you want.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's crazy though.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. It actually goes to show how easy it is to listen, whether you want to use the word indoctrinate or manipulate or influence, you know, literally an entire generation to think a certain way through an app at like the push of a button or the change of an algorithm or whatever. I mean, it's actually kind of frightening. How easy it is to get people to believe something or think a certain way.
I had an experience that shaped my thinking many years back. I was a staunch China critic after Xi Jinping came to power. Ended up being me being banned from entering China and almost getting arrested in Hong Kong during the protests. But I used the phrase brainwashed again and again in the group in Hong Kong that I work with. And then I got an email from a professor at a university in China, and he invited me to a discussion panel. And in the discussion never happened because they wouldn't allow him to go on a public forum with that. But he showed me some research he had done about brainwashing in democratic societies. It was, it's really amazing. It's very easy and so obvious that people in totalitarian regimes are being brainwashed. But it is very easy to overlook how brainwashed we are in our open Western democracies.
Well, wow. and it happens pretty easy, even on YouTube. Well, like with their algorithms, there was a psychologist that did a study, and you know they've got, so you've got your video, right, and then it's got the recommended video that the algorithm is choosing for you, and it's something like in 10 videos, it can start to change your thought process.
Yeah.
Well, I know something really crazy. When I was more into my online marketing world, there was a great book that I read called Persuasion. And it was by a guy named Dr. Robert Cialdini. He was a professor of psych at ASU or U of A rather. And it was all this research that was based on how easy it is to manipulate people's decisions using subtle clues or subtle suggestions, so subtle that you don't even pick up on them consciously, but they completely influence your decision making. I'll give you a great example that was used, where a furniture company was trying to get, you know, some information on the people that were coming to their site on whether or not they thought the price or the comfort of a couch was the most important deciding factor in their purchase. So they set up two different landing pages. One had the background that was like clouds. It was like a very soft cloud background. The other background on the other landing page was like pennies and like nickels. And it was all money. So obviously, same question, what's more important? Is it the cost or is it the comfort? You can imagine the people that landed on the, you know, clouds background page all voted for comfort being the most important factor. Everyone that landed on the background with pennies and everything, they rated cost as the most important factor. It did nothing other than have a suggestive background that led people to making a decision that they wanted, or they had an intended outcome that they were trying to produce. And just as something as simple as a background led them to making a different decision. They did the same test where they had someone ask, they had a guy ask for people's numbers outside of a store. So he was asking for people's numbers outside of a electronics store, had like a low, you know, I guess you can say conversion of ask to receiving people's numbers. But then when he did it in front of a flower shop, he got a lot more numbers from people. And it's just how your environment or something around you, something very subtle, can completely influence your outcomes of people's decision making through things they're not even consciously aware of in their environment or around them or in front of them.
Yeah, you know who that I follow that talks about this shit all the time, and he's written books about it. And I believe he was, you know, one of the students of Cialdini. Was Scott Adams. Scott Adams talks about persuasion and persuasion all the time, and it's super fascinating. You know, just how much that goes into. Is it even your decision?
Does anyone know the guy who left Facebook and then wrote a book about how Facebook uses, you know, user interfaces and how they keep you on the site and how phones are used to control your behavior? I forgot the name of this guy. I'm trying to find him desperately. He used to work for Facebook, then started his own company.
Did that guy write a book called Hooked? It was about novelty. How constant novelty like keeps you in the like dopamine.
That sounds familiar. He was on a Dan Harris podcast.
It might be that guy.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is like here in the Bay Area, I'll try to see if I can remember the name of the school, but there's a private school that all the Facebook and Google execs they send their kids to, and guess what? Your phones aren't allowed in this school.
and you know, they don't even really use computers all that much at this private school.
And that's it, Hook. That's it. That's the book I'm referring to.
Yeah, anyone who's designing products or selling products, I think you should read Hooked. And if you're in marketing, you should read Persuasion. And there is, and this is the thing that Robert Cialdini always mentioned, is that you know, there are ethical principles of influence that can be used to enhance people's lives, but in the same breath, they can be exploited and they can be used against you to, you know, get you in these, you know, product cycle loops where you're just exposed to constant novelty and they're not in your best interest. TikTok is the best example of that, where it is so much novelty, it is so much stimulation, and they use these algorithms to, you know, they can use these algorithms to get you to believe or think in certain things. And it's just a fact of the way it works.
The book is Hooked by Nir Eyal, N-I-R-E-Y-A-L, and Ryan Hoover. That's it. I'm just buying it on my Audible.
Yeah, it's a great book.
I used to love the Dan Harris podcast. Does anybody know them?
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
But yeah.
Then he gets a bit repetitive. During the Trump era, he got a bit repetitive. And then he talks too much about getting high and meditating. But Dan Harris is a fantastic podcast host.
Yeah. I'm familiar with them. Martin, have you ever heard of someone named Joe Polish? He owns Genius Network Marketing.
Joe Polish. Refresh. Genius Network. No, I actually have never.
So a lot of people like Dan Harris.
Marketing. Oh, I know Piranha Marketing. I know that book.
Yes. So that Joe's actually a friend of mine. He is really great at a lot of the networking, marketing stuff. And he's had, I believe, Robert Cialdini speak at one of his events, I believe. So he's very, very connected and close with all these people. If you ever get a chance to go to a Genius Network annual event, I highly suggest it. It's a phenomenal event. Lots of entrepreneurs and everyone you could want to meet or learn something from goes to that.
Oh, it's for free. The Genius Network, World's Greatest Wisdom, Genius Network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marty, you would probably really like it. Like, they hold the annual event here at what's the name of the place? Somewhere here in Scottsdale, or Paradise Valley, somewhere here in Arizona. It's an annual event.
Thank you for the tip and looking at it. I wish I had more time for podcasts. I used to listen to so many podcasts. Now I don't have that much time anymore.
Yeah, you're neck deep in crypto now.
Oh God, yeah.
deep in the DAO.
It's unbelievable. I'm so happy with the position at Apple, where people have a serious mindset, and my boss listens to me. It's amazing. I've never worked at a company where I had so much ear time of the people in charge. It's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. That's good to hear. How long have you been there for?
About a year. I used to work. I got hired by the New York brokerage called J&K. They're like in face-to-face network for alt energy, semiconductors. They have calls with analysts, and I have a background in marketing in the tech space. I used to live in Taiwan. I had a marketing company there focusing on IT products and semiconductors. I used to work with TSMC and NVIDIA and all these people. And with that, I got in contact with J&K. And when I decided to leave Asia and move back to Europe, they wanted me to move to New York, but then COVID happened. Then I got hired there. And then Apple bought J&K, so I came in through the back door, as it were. I was
any thoughts of moving to the US at all?
Well, I need to spend so much time in London, and most of our development team is in Braga in Portugal, and we have we are so global that it doesn't make any difference whether I'm in New York or whether I'm in London. I have to fly back and forth anyway. I have to be 1 week a month now in London. And I also have to be in Zurich for other reasons. And I have teaching obligations in Europe. So, and I don't want to just fly all the time back and forth. I think if I were based in New York, I would be flying back to Europe all the time. And obviously, for tax reasons, I don't necessarily fancy moving to America.
Yeah, you got that right, especially New York.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, you got Nevada. There's no income tax. You got Florida. There's no income tax. Wyoming. There's no income tax.
Wyoming. I vote for Wyoming. I'll be a Dow in Wyoming.
See?
The Dr. Dow.
the Dr. Dow, Martin.
Dr. Token. Dow.
Buy my token. Going to the moon. LFG.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part two of the three-part space. Why DAG will be top 10, Web3, NFTs, ESG. Hosted by Dagnum PI. That's a great name. Recorded on Sunday, May 22nd, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. And if you want to keep listening, Dagnum PI, goddamn, that is a great name. If you want to keep on listening, I'm broke and need money, so TerraSpaces.org/donate. Or I'll just go get a real job, I guess. When I'm ripping and rapping, I ain't picking the bastards who be tricking the masses into getting their asses kicked. Feels like I've been getting my masters. Fuck a pump and double like the income that's passive. Raise up the bar before I fly right past it. I'll be writing rhymes till they put me in a casket. Old man shit, put the lotion on its skin. Then put that shit back in the damn basket. Like Buffalo Bill, the way I'm ruffling feathers. Snuffing out debt, cut the heads off collectors. Keep a couple heads in a jar as keepsakes. And take the rest and turn them into free. Upgrade the feeling, supply the free base. Looking all professional, tools in the briefcase. Running on empty from gassing up my teammates. First one down, let me know how that sleep tastes.
Now places the lotion in the basket.
And impossible, defending the plausible from end to demonstrable. The mission isn't even worried about the clearance. Running interference till our enemies fear us. We're only one disappearance away from a bad day. Everybody trying to save face on the last day. Feeling fancy, about to pull out the masse. Drop the eight ball in passing, that's so passe. I'm getting nasty, you cannot put it past me. A mix between blasphemy and tuck everlasting. Feeling like a masterpiece, looking like a tragedy. Trying to get through another day full of savagery. Getting headstrong from working in the mess hall, all hands on deck, waiting for our next haul. I need the rest, got big plans to eject, so feed the grass and keep off the Kleenex.
I am interested in magic because I am fascinated with psychology. I love to learn about how people make inferences go, how they draw conclusions, find patterns and information. And in particular, I'm interested in all that can go wrong. How an individual can be led astray with certain cognitive vulnerabilities or exploited.